Okay, welcome to Casual Disasters Season 3. I'm super excited to have my guest Mandy Manning here today. I had to remember which year this was, 2018. You were the Teacher of the Year nationally and for our state of Washington. And I didn't know about this other piece that you had gone to China and that was separate of that award.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The year before in 2017, I was the 2017 Washington State NEA Educator of Excellence.
Oh, okay.
And at that time, and I don't even know what it was called. I think it was California Casualty. Now it's like Traveler's Award. I don't know. But at that time, the NEA Foundation Fellowship was connected to the Educator of Excellence. Mm-hmm. And so I got to go on like the Global Fellowship, and that was to China.
Oh. And then did that award lead to the national?
No.
So then you won Washington State the next year?
Yes. Actually, when I was flying back from China in the airport, the ESD 101 called me and told me that I had been selected for the region. And it was a totally separate, like a separate nomination, separate
application
process and all of that stuff. Yeah.
That's what I thought. I'm like, so you won three awards really? Like consecutively,
yes. Yeah.
But one was 17, then those were 18.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that before this episode started, Mandy and I were just talking about astrology and dating. So I was like, we should just start recording. But we weren't even talking about education.
No.
But actually, our connection started, I think, when we both became trainers for the state.
Yeah.
Cultural competency or CRCM.
Culturally responsive classroom management. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I was in that. Were you with me in the original cohort that was in Seattle? Or did you get picked up later? I feel like you joined after this award.
Yes, I joined. Well, I think I started before, but then I became the Teacher of the Year. So then I didn't do much training.
Okay, maybe that's what it was. So
yeah,
like
I did it like a year. And then there was a gap while I was doing all of my stuff for pretty much 2 years. And then I came back and did a couple more things. And then I got a different job. So
I know it's nuts because I'm like, then you left teaching to go work for the state.
Yeah. For the educators union. Yeah, yeah. The state level. Yeah.
Yeah. How did that happen? Did you just apply after we got back or you got back from that?
Yeah. There were some circumstances that led me to want to look for something different.
I remember that.
And the position in communications opened up at WA just right at that time. And so my journey to being an educator is like not your normal. Like I didn't go to school to be a teacher. I went to school for communications.
Really?
Yeah. And so I just became a teacher because I had joined the Peace Corps. And then I came back and I really enjoyed teaching. And then I got a job in Texas teaching, which was wild. I used to work in TV stations.
Really? Before this?
Mm-hmm. And then I became a teacher and I taught 21 years. And then it's so fulfilling being a teacher. So it's so hard because of all of the external elements outside of the classroom, but like teaching kids is really amazing and connecting with them. And just seeing them grow and become whole humans is such an incredible experience. Plus you like almost on a daily basis, you feel you're making an impact on a large impact because you can see the effect of what you're doing every day. And that doesn't necessarily happen when you're working in communications, but I do like that. It also fulfills like my current position fulfills a lot of my other things that I love to do. Like I love writing. And I get to do a ton of writing and all kinds of things. Plus, I still get to advocate for kids and educators. It's just not like you just don't see the impact regularly. Yeah. So it's not as fulfilling.
Because it's probably way like behind the scenes or.
Yes. Yeah. It's super behind the scenes. And my connection to schools, I still go into schools like to do like highlight members and things like that. But that is always fun because I get to see, you know, that connection between educators and just what kids are doing and all that stuff. But it's not the the same.
It's so different because it's not your own impact.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But the work of the union is so critical. So
I mean, it directly impacts all of us.
Yes.
Even if you're not seeing it.
Yes. Yeah. So I very much am happy, but I do miss students a lot.
Yeah. And something that's unique that maybe people wouldn't even know. And I feel like I'm always telling people about the Newcomers Center because you also taught in a super unique.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many years you did that, but that program itself is so unique.
Yes.
In the schools.
When did I start doing the Newcomers Center full time? I think like in 2011. And so I did that for till I left in 2020. So I did that quite a while. And it was so unique and so lovely.
Yeah.
Because you have this whole group of kids that are from all over the world and they're brand new to the United States and they're so excited and they are so committed to learning. And so you're in the classroom and they're actually excited to be there and very dedicated and trying. And it was really, if I ever do go back to teaching, it will be such a different experience because the chance that I would be able to do Newcomers again would be probably slim to none. So sometimes I'm like, I don't know. Cause I was spoiled.
Ferris was the first, right?
Mm-hmm. Ferris was first. Now look at y'all. You have so many across the district, which is so incredible.
They're really, really impactful. I mean, huge.
So impactful because I'm sure that there's some data somewhere, but my kids all would graduate within like 4 or 5 years of coming here and not being like 15 years old and not some of them even older and not knowing English and then graduating like on time or very close to on time
I did not know that.
Yes. It's wild. It's like really cool. But it's about that foundation of security and being able to take risks and learning that, you know, it's okay to make mistakes and that's how you learn. And then just that being within that environment where you're all in the same position. So you gain confidence in a way that kids who are just thrown into a regular classroom, being an English language learner and not, or multilingual learner and not knowing anything, it can kind of shut down your ability to be brave.
Yeah. It was, ours got so full at Yasuhara, we had to open a second classroom, I think, mm-hmm. when I left. That was just in the first year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it initially was just going to stay at Shaw, but they were like, no, we have to open another one here. And then it opened to two more.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was a long time of work with so many of the teachers advocating for that. And then, you know, the administrators and everybody, because it really does make a huge difference. Because if you look, like, I don't know if we want to get way deep into that, but like if you look at a lot of the long-term language learners who stay in the program forever and ever are the ones who come in even like an elementary school where you would think that they'd be able to, but because they don't have that foundation of security, they just don't progress at the same rate.
I always wondered that because I was an elementary counselor and our students were just thrown in. They got pull-out services, but they weren't like in a newcomer's center when they arrived here.
Or even sheltered. Like in the upper grades, they have sheltered instruction. So they get, you know, an English or multilingual learner specialist who teaches them and teaches them their content area and language through like, usually it's in English, language arts and social studies, sometimes math, sometimes science, depending on the school. And even that is supportive of like creating an environment where you can take risks and you can learn the foundations of language before you get thrown into just a total no, like almost no language support. And pull-out services are, I mean, they're a little bit of help, but that's also really hard and frustrating for everybody because how do you provide all of that if you're not there all the time?
I wonder right now, like, what's happening with Newcomers Centers? Like, I haven't heard anything.
Well,
here in our city, but
I mean, it's status quo right now. Like, they're moving forward. And I believe that here in our city, they are very supportive of ensuring that every single student in a school has what they need to progress. But like nationally, all of the funding cuts that they were going to be making this summer were directly linked to support for multilingual learners.
Yeah.
And so.
In special education.
Oh, in special education.
I was just thinking of all those special programs.
Yeah. And so it's, I don't know, we're in a lot of, there's so much ambiguity, but I will say that's one of the strengths of educators, because we're taught to monitor and adjust and monitor and adjust and monitor and adjust. So boots on the ground, educators will continue to do what they need to do for their kids, but it is going to be hard. It's going to be hard when we really see the effects of some of these things that are coming down the pipeline, because it's going to end up closing some schools. It's going to end up, I don't know about here in our community or in our state, because Washington State does make a strong effort to ensure that we can continue to provide the service level that we have always. And I think there's just so much lack of understanding that public schools can't, like, we're the only one that serve every kind of kid. Like, every kid that you can think of, we serve. And I think people like the idea of being able to send their kid wherever they want, like with vouchers or school choice or whatever you want to call it. But that's not really realistic. Like, I started digging into it just myself, and I was looking at the number of private schools that we have in the area, and it doesn't even like serve like 10% of the population that we have in Spokane. So if everybody like wants school choice and they want to be able to go wherever they want to go, that's just not, it's not a reasonable option.
Yeah. I'm also thinking about I'm working in an ALE now, an alternative learning environment. There are requirements from the state that we have to follow. And if we don't, you have to go back to your brick and mortar. And I'm wondering with the vouchers, I'm like, I went to Catholic school and you couldn't do anything bad. They could kick you out for any reason. So I'm like, then what happens to that? Like, when you don't follow whatever voucher school you get into or going to,
right,
you're gone, like, is what I would assume. And then where are you going?
And your money doesn't really follow you. So like, if the money went to, say, a charter or a private or whatever, that money is there. And then they do their, you know, kick everybody out.
So, and the money sits there? For how long? That duration of the year?
I don't know.
That'd be wild.
I mean, so then you're expecting the public schools to serve more kids for even less. And so it's just like, and I could be, everybody check your facts, because because I don't have any of that right in front of me.
Yeah, I'm curious about the vouchers in that way, because I'm like, just working in an alternative environment where someone isn't successful or finding even that they're accessing their learning, I'm like, then what? Because I know that they can go back to their, with their funding, back to that building. And there's so many better things in person too than like maybe some of the ALEs or virtual school can offer. Even though we can accommodate beyond anything I even imagined a school doing.
Yeah.
But it's still not enough, like, for families. And that, to me, scares me if a voucher goes in. And then I went to Catholic school where it was like, oh, you cussed or you did X, Y, Z, you're out.
Yeah. Or if they don't have the infrastructure to support you because you have some sort of specific IEP, developmental 504. Or learning or behavioral issue. Yeah. Like, they just are going to be like, we can't serve you, so you're out.
That's what would concern me.
Yes. And so then you're also looking at, like, the public schools are going to be serving an inordinately large number of, we already do, but we balance that with the kids who don't have the developmental or, you know, learning or behavioral issues, so that we can have a well-rounded education and be able to serve our highest achievers and our kids on the lower end. And if we only have, like, we're in, I just, it would be really, really hard. And the class sizes would end up larger. We would end up with fewer teachers. And I don't know. I just think people don't think far enough ahead about these things.
No.
So, I mean, weird segue, but I think about this with music.
Do you play music?
I do. Yeah, but not like, I sing mostly, but I was at a concert recently, and this is like my through line. You got to follow me here for a second. But because we filter a lot of our ideas and our experiences with things through our own personal like journey, right? So music is such a good example of this. So I was at this Dermot Kennedy concert, which, if you don't know his music, he's like a storyteller and it's beautiful.
Country?
No, he's from Ireland. And he is like, I don't even know how to describe it.
But is he here in Spokane?
I had to fly to LA.
Oh, okay. I was like.
No, but it's Dermot Kennedy. Anyway, so I was at this concert and it was a very profound experience because he talks about a lot of things as he's going through his music. And I'm watching everybody because it was kind of a smallish venue. And I was watching everybody and I'm having my own experience, but I'm watching everybody clearly connects to this music, okay? And so if you think about that, everybody connects to music, right? It's one of the things where a song connects to this like feeling, right? That we all have. So like sadness or you go through a breakup or you have, you know, whatever. But each of us filters it through our own personal experience. So I'm sitting next to someone who is having this response to this song, but it's because of whatever they have experienced. Or like my friend who was with me, they are connecting the music to specific relationships or specific experiences that they have. And then I'm sitting here like having my own experience, but I'm also thinking about the universality of this feeling, right? Mm-hmm. Most people don't make that second leap. That this is a universal feeling. Mm-hmm. And like, but so we stay isolated in that experience. So we're having this emotional like upheaval or experience, but we all are, but no one is noticing that we all are, right?
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing with like, I'm frustrated with public education and here's my specific story as to why. And I am isolated in that experience. Mm-hmm. When in reality, like we have there are universal issues, right? Or like, and so for that person, the solution is vouchers, which then eliminates the universal. Because if you start to support something that limits access, you are not coming at it from a community-minded perspective or this universal need for education for everybody. Or this universal like feeling of deep, deep heartbreak because you've broken up with someone and this song just so perfectly describes that feeling that you had. And so you're keeping that for yourself without recognizing, hey, I could hold the hand of the person next to me and we could share in this like really sad experience because we've both experienced it just in maybe a different way. And so like, I just think about that all the time. Like you just, the solution to problems is not to further limit access. The solution to problems is to recognize that we have a larger issue that we all need to address because it will fix my tiny problem, which feels like the world to me. Mm-hmm. So, but then we would actually be able to fix it for everybody because it's actually universal.
What do you think blocks people from that thought of like universal or everyone?
I think it's personal pain. I think it's personal pain and feeling like you cannot lean on someone else. Mm-hmm. And that maybe you shouldn't, or that, I mean, except the individuality, the bootstrap mentality. If we are supposed to pull ourselves up from the bootstraps, then we shouldn't be asking for help. We shouldn't be leaning on someone else. And it, I mean, like it goes into even like, if you've gotten help and you don't want someone else to get the same help you did, because then it would say that you needed help.
Yeah. I was also thinking like, what if someone wasn't lent help? So they're like, well, then no one's getting help.
Right. Yeah. Or even someone.
Where I'm not going to help them.
Yeah. Or even someone who was able to like totally help themselves and they're like, I'd help myself. I mean, I don't know. I'm in Gen X. And so I grew up with boomer folks, like my parents and my grandparents, for sure, like greatest generation. And it was literally like I walked to school uphill both ways in that stuff. So you need to suffer too. And it's like, what? But why? Why? Maybe someone should have, you know, helped you go to school. Like,
why did you have to walk up
and
the hill?
How come because you did that, I have to do that? How about we figure out an easier way? And I just think it's that. I just think it's that isolated suffering and the feeling of disconnection, which then brings us full circle back to the classroom. Because the more kids feel secure and safe and that they belong, the more open they are to learning and all of that stuff. And then, you know, you accept other people. What? Shocking.
Yeah. It's interesting. I see this a lot, like in schools. I'm like, we're all feeling like that universally, but no one's discussing it. Like we do it in this, we get really mad at each other. I notice in meetings and we think it's like very much like we're pinned against each other, but it's like, no, we're all just really upset because this is really frustrating.
Yeah.
And we want a solution. But we don't want to, like, I don't know. It's just interesting. We are like our own barrier to mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. And then when you get together, you just complain.
Yeah. We just, oh, yeah. Because then it's just a
right
trauma dump. Because then you're exhausted and you're burnt out. And then you're like, bleh.
Yes. And then it's just sort of like, yeah, it so sucks. And there's still not a recognition. Hey, this is a problem. I am noticing that you are complaining about it in this way, but it's really the same problem. How about we like figure out how to solve that problem? But we just don't. And we band-aid things, you know, like we're like, well, it's just, you know, we'll gloss over it. We'll put a band-aid on it and then it'll be all right for a minute until it like bleeds through. Bleeds through the band-aid.
Yeah. I think about that all the time. I'm like, oh, we're just like built to be pinned against each other mm-hmm. too. So mm-hmm. like not taking it personally, but then how do you get people to see that like we're actually universally feeling the strain, the pressure.
Yeah.
And frustrated that we don't have, because mm-hmm. it goes way beyond school walls. Like when students come to us and there's all, you know, the variety of things that are happening in community or at home. And it's like, oh, I don't have that resource. I have no idea how to help this family.
Yep. Yeah. And that really, we can't.
Yeah. Like we're just a school.
Yeah. You're just a school or you're, you know, a counselor or a teacher or an education support professional or whoever. And like, it can't just be up to us to fix all of the social issues.
Yeah.
In the world. And, but you know, maybe if we all felt a little bit more connected, a little bit more together. And I love the trauma dump stuff because we love a sad story.
We do.
We love a sad story. We love a sad story or like a icky story or anything bad.
Love it.
We
yeah.
like, we're like right in there. Oh, you got some tea to do? Uh-huh. Let's yeah. spill it. Whatever. I want to hear.
I love trauma dumping yes. on my staff.
Yes. And it feeds us somehow. And
well, I was going to say, it's like that. A lot of our work can feel isolating. So then you're like, well, I want to talk to somebody. It's not even trauma dumping. It's like, do you guys hear this too? Is this happening somewhere else? Like, yes. This is what's happening.
And how sad is it, though, that we seek connection through negative things, right?
I feel like that's not even just education.
It's just life. It's just sort of like, you know, you could have a whole great day and everybody could tell you how great you look and how, like, what a lovely smile or whatever, or like, you really did great on that project. Or so, and then the very last thing you hear, or even in the middle of it, someone could say something shitty to you and you're gonna forget all those other things and you're gonna focus on that really crappy thing.
Oh, yeah.
And sorry, I don't know if I was supposed to say cuss.
Oh, yeah, you can cuss on here.
All right.
I was forgetting to tell you guys that.
Okay, great. But so we just are gonna, like, we're hardwired for negativity.
Yeah.
And which is so unfortunate. So many things in society teach us that it's supposed to be bad. Like,
yeah.
It's supposed to be bad. You're supposed to suffer. Like, if you look at religion and religious teaching, you know, those who suffer will inherit the earth or whatever. like you're supposed to suffer and that's supposed to somehow be righteous or good. Like even in relationships. And if you think about, I mean, we go into patriarchy and misogyny or whatever, yeah. but like you, like we're trained that the woman has a worse experience in a relationship. Like it just is normal.
Whether there was like research that came out that said women actually do worse like in relationships than single. Yeah. Being single.
Yeah. Yes. 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 It. They're like. Yes.
That's how it's painted. And
yes. And I mean anything, right? Like, I mean, if we were going to talk about sex, like we are trained that men want it, men need it and want it, and women are just supposed to do it. And without even considering like that it could be good. It could actually be something that a woman wanted. And like, maybe if you're not enjoying it, there could be something wrong with it.
Yeah.
But we're just, we're just taught that it's not like a thing that for a woman. And so, oh, okay. It's supposed to suck. Like think about that for a second. It's supposed to not be awesome.
You just made me think of my friend. Her entire dissertation was on female orgasm. And yeah, it was like over 70% of women will never like climax from that. And I'm like, maybe it's because of this mindset of believing and we don't, and it's not fun and it's not great and you shouldn't, and you don't get to enjoy. And
well, and
I can't remember what her whole thesis was now, but I'm like, it must be connected to that.
Yeah. And you're like, it filtered. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, yeah, we've gone through a lot of topics here.
ADHD. I was gonna say all of them, like, I don't know. I feel like that's on the podcast too. Like anytime you're a guest, like, it's whatever that person's interested in, and we can just go anywhere.
Yes, and I do have ADHD, so
me too. Leading you down the path here, of any path you want to go on.
Let's go on this train ride. But so I just everything we're supposed to. It's like work. Like there's the phrase that I hate. Well, at least you have a job. At least.
At the least.
Like at least. Like it could be the crappiest, most awful job. And it, but you know what? You are working. What? No.
Almost in the opposite of being negative. It's like we just spin everything to you don't get to feel like any bad, or you just you have to accept this. It's just, I feel like we do that too a lot, humans do.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing about suffering. You just have to accept that life is hard. Life is hard. Life is so hard. And why? Like, honestly, why? 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 I mean, yes, there are social barriers that create existence that is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but we create that.
Yeah.
We do that. We do that to ourselves. And I'm not trying to say individually, like, I didn't work hard enough. That is not what I'm saying. I am saying, like, societal structures have created obstacles that are nearly impossible to overcome for a good majority of people. And I still ask why. Why do we do that to each other? Why do we agree as a society to circumstances that create sadness and like difficulty?
Yeah. I feel like it goes back to what you were saying about baby boomer Gen X, that like, and that if they didn't have it, why do you get to have it?
Right.
So then we're just punishing the future generations.
Yeah. Because I suffered, you have to suffer. Yeah. And it's like, how about I have suffered, let's figure out how none of us have to suffer anymore. Like, just because I suffered doesn't mean I have to continue to suffer. Mm-hmm. And if I change things for the better, that's going to make me not suffer, and it's going to make other people not suffer. And I mean, I don't know what would happen. Like, maybe all of our heads would explode because we didn't have enough negativity.
Yeah, what would humans do?
I don't know. I'm in a new relationship I've been in for almost 3 months, and it's been like lovely. It's been so lovely that I find it hard to talk to people about it because I don't have anything to complain about.
Yeah, I was going to, when you were talking earlier about, I don't know, just positivity and staying negative, I'm like, I almost feel like people are more mad at me right now that I'm, or like Matt and I've talked about this in like a healthy, happy relationship, that I post it, that people are like more disgusted by that than me being maybe in a bad, toxic relationship that no one could see on social media. And now that I'm happy, people are like, oh, this is like fake and attention seeking. And I'm like, no, I'm just really happy.
Right.
And then I find myself like, don't talk about, like, even with my coworkers going through a divorce, and I was saying something, or I was about to today to her, but then I was like, oh, don't, you know, like, it's too positive about your relationship. Don't say it.
Right.
Like, I even catch myself filtering like the positivity to other people. But I'm like, oh, it's like the safest attachment, healthy attachment relationship I've ever been in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really an interesting, it has been an interesting experience, and I've had good relationships before. Like, I don't want to say like that I haven't, but it's just this particular relationship is like my whole self, because my other really good relationship was when, before I came out as a lesbian, and that relationship was we were really healthy and we had a really good life, but I'm gay. So like, it didn't work out. And so like, there was an aspect of it that was like an obstacle for me, because no matter how great our life was, I was always like, what's wrong with me? Until I had a circumstance that I was like, oh okay, I'm just gay. Cause I'd always identified as like pansexual or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, And so there's that piece now too. So I have this really healthy, connected, like committed, beautiful, supportive, enhancing each other relationship without like, I don't know. It's just really lovely and no toxicity at all. Like red flags don't even exist. And which is that in and of itself, I've overlooked nothing. Like I have to check with myself all the time. But in communicating with other people, I am just like, oh yeah, how's your life? Because it's very, where do you go from, oh, everything is awesome with my partner?
Well, and I thought about this too before I was dating Matt, but like I had never seen even marriages that seemed healthy to me, or that people never talked really positively about their partners. So then it felt like uncomfortable. My schema, I was so miserable in relationships prior to him that like I was seeking that too. Like, oh, everyone's just miserable. You hate your partner a little bit always.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah.
And then I was like, oh, wait, you can actually like them. And like, this is like, you know, yes, like consensual and kind. And it's like you're saying, there's no like red flags or negativity. I was like, I never saw that in my entire life.
Never. I mean,
not with my parents, you know, like I'm seeing like immediate family. I was thinking, like, I've said this, but like every one of my males on my mom's side have cheated on their partners. So like, we're talking every generation in my immediate like lineage has been like kind of a piece of shit to the partners.
Right.
And I hope they're not listening to this, but, but it's facts. Like every male on both sides of my family, it's been really bad towards women. So I'm like, why would my experience then when I go to date be not similar?
Right.
Because that's all I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've tried to say this to people in my family. They do not like it.
No.
So they hear this, but it's facts. All the women, I've even started like tallying like which of my aunts has not been in a DV or experienced that.
Right.
Then that's what your schema is. And that's like how you go out to the world and dating is you're like, that men are mean. And that's just, women tolerate it.
Yes.
I mean.
Well, and I see those like heteronormative things fall into gay relationships too. Like you see a super like weird toxic situation that is really heteronormative, where there's like one person who's
playing the role of a male, or
expecting you to, or like whatever. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. Even if you're both women or identify as women.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be. Like I'm not making comments about everybody.
Yeah.
But I mean, it bleeds into anything, right? So like relationships, my relationship is really good. So what do I talk about? Because if I go on and on about what makes it so good, oh, look at this really great thing we did, or this really great thing or whatever, that gets a little...
Does it feel braggy to you?
It does. It does. Even though I don't think it is. Like I'm just talking about my life.
Isn't it weird though? Because you could go off about how, let's say they're an asshole, for hours and hours.
For
and
hours.
It's toxic, and this is, person is so bad. And everyone would be like, yeah, oh, yeah, this is horrible.
Yeah.
But as soon as you switch to that, why is like the positivity, like it does, I feel like, ooh, that's too much. Like,
yep.
Or I just don't even talk about him in general. If I don't know, because I'm like, it's too good. So
right.
Just keep it a secret.
Or if people like, maybe it's because you feel like you're going to make them feel bad. Or maybe they feel bad. Like, it's just so weird. But it's
And I know people have felt bad. They've even said, like, I don't want to see it. Like, you guys are annoying.
So, right, because like, they don't have it, or like they don't believe it exists.
Yeah.
But they, like, even beyond relationships, like it's anything. Like, I remember when I came back from the Peace Corps and I was like, oh, and no one wanted to hear anything about it.
Really?
And I was like, they don't mind hearing like if I had a difficult time, because there were aspects of the Peace Corps that were super hard, like terrible. But like, it was also this really cool experience. Like, I traveled internationally. I lived in another culture. I learned a language. I learned, like, there were so many great things, but people don't want to. So I learned really early that you just don't talk about your experiences unless it's something bad. And so, and I don't know if it's, like, I have no idea why. Well, maybe it goes back to that idea that, like, everybody's life is just supposed to suck, and my life sucks. And so, and if we have an aspect that is good, or we've done something that's cool, then there's a possibility that something else is an option. And we've all just agreed to a social structure that does not lend itself to really joyful options.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, people have muted me or unfollowed because of, like, too much positivity, which I'm like, I bring up lots of negative stuff, but I think I outbalance it maybe with, like, being like, this cool thing and this cool thing that's in our community or this, and then they're like, ugh, that's too much.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? I was like, the internet's so negative.
It's so negative.
So I'm like, there's no need for me to, like, dump any more negative information out here. Sometimes I'll, like, say stuff, but it's super rare these days, like, because it's so, the nature of, like, right now is so toxic to me.
Yeah. I mean, it has to go back to mindset, I think, because I follow you on, I think, both Instagram and Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I love your posts, and I'm always like, oh, she's doing so many great things.
Yeah, but it
she's
makes you feel so mad sometimes.
But I think it has to do with
where you're at, maybe
where
personally.
I'm at. I live in joy, and I always have, like, my entire life. A lot people who are closest to me do not always understand me. And so I like when other people are happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, like, good things just happen the happier I am, which is weird. And it's so hard. Like, even right now, I feel really bad about saying stuff like that, because then people feel like, well, what are you trying to say? I'm not happy enough, so good things aren't happening to me. And I'm like, well, no, like, that's not why. There are actual societal barriers that are preventing a lot of people from being able to do things. Like, we have an unhoused issue. We've got funding issues. Like, there are people right now who are suffering greatly because of the government shutdown. And people I know who are facing in like 1 or 2 weeks being laid off, and
food stamps,
social security checks probably will not be there. So that affects my family directly. So there are, like, there's legitimate reasons that we are suffering, and there's still like people call it. So I always get really good parking spots.
Oh,
it is like a pull up to the front of the restaurant and randomly a spot is open. And I just go in. And so, like, my family and my friends will say, is this a parking lot? Is this a parking spot situation? Because, like, good things will just happen.
To you specifically?
And I don't, yes, but I don't necessarily think that anything is happening to me that's different than happening to other people. Mm-hmm. It's just that I recognize it.
Mm. Yeah, like, you're seeing it. Or maybe someone isn't identifying it.
Right. So I see the open parking spot, whatever it may be, like, oh, we went to a restaurant and there weren't any seats available on the rooftop. this is a stupid example. No, but, and so we're sitting there waiting for a table, not on the rooftop. We were like, oh, it's fine. We'll just sit wherever. And so we're waiting to be seated. And then he comes over and he says, actually, I have opened up a spot for you and we're going to seat you on the rooftop. And I'm like, I literally did nothing for that to happen except be joyful and accept that we were not going to have a seat on the rooftop, right? Like, or I don't know, it could be anything. And you just notice it. You're like, oh, I have to drive this way. Here's an example. There is construction on a street that I have to go on every day. And there has been construction since May. And there's no way they're finishing it before winter because they cannot pave like after a certain certain temperature. And so I know it's not going to get done. But so I'm like, oh, I mean, that's a pain, right? Mm-hmm. I constantly have to go a long way. Well, I found a different route and I'm taking it. And just the other day I was driving along it and I had the pleasure of seeing the red maple turn from green to red in increments every single day. And like, I wouldn't have seen that had that obstacle not gotten in my way. But also if I was just pissed about the obstacle, I might not have seen it as well because I wasn't looking for the good.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be called toxic positivity, but I recognize, like, I get mad and I cry and I'm upset and I've hit my steering wheel. Damn it, it's still fucking closed. Oh my God. But also, you know, like now, like today they were all red. All of them were red. And I was like, oh, it was so beautiful. And so like, you can have both things.
Mm-hmm.
You can have, like, I'm sure your relationship with Matt is great right now. My relationship with Angel is great right now. But, like, there's other hard things in my life. Like, I have not finished my dissertation, and I can't make myself, and it's horrible. And, like, there are like, legitimate obstacles that I am really trying to overcome, and that sucks. But I have good things, too, and it balances. Just like you and Matt are great, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, today, maybe something happened at work that wasn't so exciting or happy, right?
Yeah.
But you're going to move through it and you're going to be like, okay. And because I saw the pretty trees or because like we can bask in these lovely personal relationships, maybe I can see a path forward that is a little bit more positive for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking like even him and I like have had barriers within, like we were long distance when we started dating. Then we had to figure out how he was coming back here. And that was kind of challenging. I don't know, but like it's still different when you're in like a volatile relationship, a safe relationship. Even if we've disagreed, it's like we have way healthier rebounding back from, you know, like a disagreement or,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just so different than like when you're in unsafe, like chaotic, but also I can see positivity with him and like moving forward. And
yeah,
I don't know, it's not all negative, even if there's like,
right.
It's not, yeah, like you're still going to have issues with the relationship, but it's, I don't know, it's not the main focus of my relationship for once, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, which then I thought that was just normal, like being in miserable all the time with your partner.
Right.
Which is what you're talking about. It's like, that's all we noticed. I don't even think I could notice nice things. I think I didn't realize it until I was out of my long-term 14-year relationship. I was like, oh, maybe we were like young and he wasn't just a horrible person. Like,
right.
You know, but that's like all I wanted to talk about. That's all people wanted to hear about. Like,
yes. Yeah. You know? And there's always lessons to be learned as well. Mm-hmm. Like, so this really terrible relationship happened or this really terrible thing happened. And,
oh, yeah.
And at the end of it, you're like, ugh. And then you just kind of have to look at it as an opportunity to, well, what was my part? What was my part in that? And how can I move forward differently to ensure that I don't experience that again?
Oh, yeah. I think that's the hardest part is the facing yourself. Like, it wasn't just like this one person and they were just, I'm just like 100% victim. There's no consent. Like something went down with me and I was co-signing this behavior too. So
yeah,
that reflection back or like having to like face myself after multiple bad or, you know, relationships. I was like, oh, there's something like with me too. Like I'm a part of this. Like it's not just happening to me.
Right. And that's not like it's not ever like if you're in an abusive relationship, it's not ever the abuse, the abusee,
abused.
The person
the abused,
who's the abused, the abused. It's not that, you know, like there are so many mental things that you go through in an abusive relationship.
Yeah, that's a whole.
Yes. So like, it's not a matter of like, well, what could I have done differently?
No.
It's what signs can you look for?
Yeah,
what is important for you?
Not like a shame spiral.
No.
Or like feeling like I'm a bad person.
I'm a bad person because I did. Yes. That's not what I'm saying.
No, me neither. It was like, Oh, I'm really giving and I'm like super into helping people, which are positive things, but then they can become
super toxic.
Yeah, because I'm like, can be codependent and want to fix everyone's problems. And I remember a therapist saying to me, like, stop fucking dating your caseload. Not like literally, but like, you know, like these adult men that, you know, you're attracted to, you want to like be their counselor.
Yeah.
I was like, ew, no.
Ew.
I don't,
right.
I don't actually logically want to do that.
Yes.
But then you do it because it like feeds a need for me to help people.
Yes. And then it turns into a situation. And so it's not like it was your fault.
No,
that you
I definitely
were...
didn't want to be abused. And I don't think anyone wants to be abused.
Right.
Yeah.
And you didn't put yourself into a situation. You just followed your natural nature of being a caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's about like, okay, well, what signs can I look for in the future? And then just like letting go of that. Like, so I've heard people like really be so mean to themselves because they stayed in something for
that's
so
part of
long.
I feel like that piece that hinders a lot of people and makes them stay longer because they're like, well, I made this bad choice and I just like can't get out of it and I just have to stay.
Yeah.
I've seen it so many times with people I know, like just sticking with someone because they're like sitting in that shame. Like, I don't know. It's like a holding pattern of like, well, I'm bad and I'm embarrassed that I made this choice. So I should just stay.
Yeah.
Or like me, stubborn. So then you're like, I will prove that this was the right choice, even though I know it's really, really wrong choice.
Yeah.
They're going to turn at any point and be better.
Right. And it's just like taking, like forgiving yourself.
Yeah. I think that was the biggest thing.
Right.
Was like, oh, I am not bad in this. I did not deserve this. And what are the signs I can look for? Like, I could get to a place of solution rather than just like, you're bad, this is bad, and everyone hates you, and this is a poor choice, and so embarrassing. It was like, the best qualities about me were some of the things that person really liked, so they're not bad. It's just that I was like maybe too forgiving and stubborn or whatever, and what are the things that I can change so that I don't like stay as long as I did just because I'm sitting in shame spiral. Like, at least that's what I always refer to it as. Cause I'm like, oh, my family and everyone's judging me. And so I can't leave. And
And I mean, I think guilt and shame and embarrassment are like huge factors in people being unable to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, you're like, we can't change the past.
No.
Like, we can't change what already happened. And we can only move forward differently and with learning. And so, and I think sometimes when we refuse to confront, well, what attracted me? Or what kept me? Or what did that abuser tap into that, you know, I could maybe heal so that I don't operate the same way. It's like this extends into anything in life too. Like if you grew up and you thought a certain thing about a group of people because you were raised that way, and then you're like digging your heels in because that's what your family believed, and you don't want to think about like what, but maybe you learned something different. But you still then feel guilty because you've had this opinion about this group of people and you don't want to admit it or whatever. Instead of just being like, whoa, I was wrong. I can't change what I already did or said or how I acted. And I have to forgive myself for that. And now I'm going to move forward differently because I learned something new. And I'm not going to feel bad that I didn't know.
Yeah, I think that holds a lot of people like in that space, though, just being, well, I guess I'll just, I don't know if it's like continuing to hate that group or think those thoughts, but I feel like it does like force people to stay in those places because they're like, how do I admit that thought that?
Well,
and why it's wrong.
And I don't want to be in a space where like that thought's going to be challenged because then I'm going to feel bad. Yeah. And you don't have to feel bad, though. That's the thing. Like, you didn't know. Once you're willfully ignorant, then you know, and maybe you should feel a little bit bad. But like, and at any time, you can change your mind and move forward differently.
Mm-hmm.
So like, guilt and shame, it's not good. I mean, that people stay in abusive relationships, like bad abusive relationships, because they're ashamed.
Yeah.
Instead of like, seeking help or whatever, because they don't want people to know. I was in a relationship for a short time, but that was like, it was really hard to extricate myself because I had been so isolated.
That's a huge part.
And then how do you talk about it? I had a hard time too, because if I talked to people about it, about what was happening and about, you know, well, it was hard to articulate too, because I couldn't quite, it was a very isolating, possessive relationship. But if I talked to people about it, then they would be like, well, why are you letting that person do that to you? And I'd be like, well, I'm just trying to create peace in my home. And if I like do the things I normally do, it's going to be really, really terrible. And so you can't talk to people about what the person's doing, because then they're like, then you really can't talk to, then you can't even see that person, because if they're in the same room with with your partner, then they're like, no. And then it's even more awkward and terrible. I don't know. Like, you just get into this whole, like, I can't talk about it. So now I'm isolated even more. So now this person is my only person and it is terrible.
Yeah, that's so true.
And so, yeah. And then,
I remember thinking that, like, if, it's better, or like, if you tell people, like, your family's less forgiving. Like, I will move on, but my family or friends, they're not going to forget and forgive. Like, they're going to hold on to that. And I quickly learned that and was like, oh, then you have to eliminate, like, what you're saying, anyone having access or learning this information. And then, yeah, that's your only go-to person. So now you're just with them in isolation and you're like, this doesn't feel great, but it feels worse to bring people around because then they can see it, I can't tell them because then they're going to be judging and pissed that this person's still around and accessing me.
Right.
Yeah. So then you're just like keeping all these worlds like.
Yeah.
It's a, it will exhaust you. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Burn you out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then on top of that, trying to be like an educator, I found this to be like the non-congruent part of me. I was like, I'm like trying to advocate for women and feminism and being a leader, but I'm over here like letting people control me, manipulate me, totally take away my power. Like, I was like, I can't let this happen. Yeah. I'm like a mentor to girls, like,
right,
you know, telling people to be empowered and speak up and advocate, but I'm not advocating for myself. I don't know if you felt like that, but we were both huge, like,
yeah,
advocates and leaders, yeah. Like, yeah, then I'm not leading and advocating and autonomous, yeah, in my own life.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, mine didn't last. Mine lasted less than a year.
Mine five. But,
yeah. Right. So like, I knew it took a long time, but it just is like, you just get into this like cycle but to bring it full circle back to teaching and education, it's that, like we already talked about, that suffering mentality. So you constantly hear about educators, how it's just like the hardest job.
Yeah.
You are superheroes.
Thank you. It's so hard.
You are just, I can't, how do you do it? And so you're praised for suffering.
Yeah. I have never had someone not praise me that way.
Right.
It's always suffering that I'm doing.
It is just so wild. And that like, it can almost become a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So like, if you you know, like you have to bend over backwards for every single kid. You have to like be on every committee and you have to do this and it because it has to be so tired and you have to.
I've learned so know, no. I'm like a big no person now.
Yeah.
I was like, I used to be like that. And I remember a counselor saying to me my first year, she's like, oh girl,
you gotta like slow
she's
down.
Like, you're like, I was year one. Green as can be out of graduate school. So hopeful I'm going to change the whole school system, you know?
Right.
And then I'm now what year? Well, I was a sub two before, but like year 11 as a school counselor. And I'm like, oh yeah, like I'm not doing that. Right. Like I'm going to do, it's always back to like the why or whatever. Like, this is my reason I'm here. This is what I'm focusing on. I'm not going to do all this extra. So ego, you know, like for everyone to praise me for suffering. Like, I don't want to suffer anymore.
No. Yeah. No. And like being honest with yourself, like we can't save every kid. Like, do we try? Sure. Like we try to be there for every kid. And like, sometimes I'm not the person for that kid or you're not the person for that kid, but maybe a kid that you're not the person for, I am, and vice versa. Right. But like, you can't be valued and vilified for the same. We are as educators valued and vilified for the same thing.
Yeah.
Is like our deep, 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 deep care for the kids.
We definitely are. That's like,
and because we're valued for it, because we will take the abuse, right? From the whoever is got their thumb on us. We will try to follow the regulations. We'll try to do this, whatever. Okay, I'll do it. Because I care about these kids in my classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, you're vilified for it because, like, you care about kids, so you actually aren't that smart and great. I don't know.
Like, it's really weird. I know. It's walking. You're like, yeah. I'm like, wait, so I'm either mean and smart, or I'm, like, right. Nice and dumb. Like,
yeah. And so I think it's, like, figuring out in yourself, like, yeah, I'm not going to put up with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I care about the kids, every single one of them, but I also am not going to take abuse because of that care.
Yeah. And like you said, I can have limitations with a relationship or like things that I can actually provide them.
Yeah.
Like I have boundaries and limits, and this is where, you know, I'm not going to go over the edge to like make everyone else happy. Because I found it never really made anyone happy when I was just like completely dumping, you know, just 24/7 access to me, running around with my head cut off, like doing, never saying no to anything. I was like, nobody's actually getting anything met through me doing this. And everyone's dissatisfied. And so why would I do it?
Right.
Now people get mad at me when I say no. And I'm like, I cannot take that on because this is where I end so that I can be present for students.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and no one thing is the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so by me saying yes to everything, I'm potentially blocking some other really important thing that could help. So like it's just like that whole, it takes a village. Well, actually it really literally does. It takes all of us. And
it does.
And yes, we're facing new challenges, and yes, we're seeing a whole different kind of whatever, from parents to kids to like societal ways of being. But it doesn't, like, that's all because our village has fallen apart.
Yeah, I was going to say, but it goes back to, again, I think the same needs are there. It's even more so community than being more isolated.
Right. And so, like, that's my challenge. Like, I think everybody should really, like, when they are connecting with something on, like, a personal level and being like, yes, this describes my personal experience, I want everybody to think about, like, will other people have to be experiencing the same emotion or challenge or whatever, because someone else was able to make you feel connected to it, which means that other people are feeling connected to it too. And so maybe we should recognize that we all suffer and we all can be each other's solution.
I mean, yeah, that's I would say that kind of like perfectly wraps up the podcast, the universal.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Because I'm like, that could go to education, to what's happening in society, to dating.
To music.
Yeah, because right now I'm like, oh, I feel like you do in relationships.
Yeah.
But I didn't always feel like this. And so other people would have related to the parts that were really difficult. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, but then you can actually break generational cycles too in your own family, which is really hard to do.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it was like it's easy, but like keep going back to like, I was like, no, I believe that there can be calmness in a relationship.
Yeah.
And I know other people have felt it.
Yes.
But no one really talks about it.
Yeah.
But universally, I knew beyond this, there's somebody else who has.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we can double date.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Because we both have healthy relationships.
Yeah, now we're so. Hell. Before I would have been like, hell no.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can call me and tell me all about the great things.
Yeah, I'll just have like just Instagram for me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's, yeah, I don't know. That I feel like that's a good point. We could like stop right there too. We hit an hour.
Yeah.
But it's been awesome having you. And I ask this question to every guest. What is your hope for Spokane?
My hope for Spokane is that we just open our eyes and look around us and think about what a beautiful, beautiful community, like city we live in. And just take that idea that we have access to so much beauty here, whether it's like actual scenic beauty, parks, out doing things outside, or just like the people doing things for other people and our neighborhoods and whatever. And just like take that and be hopeful. Just be hopeful. Like there's so much, human beings are so capable of so many beautiful things. And maybe we should focus on that beauty and not on how much pain we can cause each other. Right?
Let's just go out there.
See the beauty and be good humans.
I like that. I hope everyone hears that and takes it. We need it right now, too. Well, thank you so much for being on. And I'm so backed up on editing right now. Well, I'm not the one editing, Mattis, sorry. but I'm doing like right now 2 episodes a week. So this will hopefully be out soon. I'm trying to drop one a week, but I've been doing 2 guests a week. So I'm like, oh gosh, like now I'm backlogged as ADHD people be doing, procrastinating their work.
Yep.
But it'll soon be on Spotify, Apple, anywhere you get your podcast. So thank you for listening. Thanks, Mandy.
Yeah, thanks.